Thank you, Dizzy Gillespie, for starting off this afternoon's KDBS radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. Every Wednesday afternoon for the last decade or so, I've come down here to introduce you to poets, pundits, prognosticators, people who care about creativity, whether it's with the help of the written word or with the pixel and the code. On this afternoon's Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, I'll be featuring interviews with two different creative writers. The first is James Kalin. James Kalin has been on this radio show before the first time, about 7 years ago when he was an undergraduate at UC Davis. He had just had one of his plays produced by the Third Eye Theater Festival here on campus. And that was before he headed off to Boston University to get an MFA in creative writing fiction and then returned to the Sacramento area to pump some energy into Flatman Crooked and then start writing books. He's also a journalist. He's the author of a couple of books, including We're Getting On, which is part of the Zero Emission Book Project, and his first full-length novel, Brute, which is forthcoming later this year. Soon you'll see him on the cover of Poets and Writers magazine. We'll be joined in a few minutes by James Kalin, who's in the middle of his book tour, also his bike tour of the West Coast, from, I believe, San Diego all the way up to Seattle. He'll be coming through Davis next month. In the second half of the show, we'll hear from Laura Hope Gill. She is the Poet Laureate of the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation, author of a number of books, including The Soul Tree, Poems and Photographs of the Southern Appalachians. Laura Hope Gill is the director of the Asheville Word Fest of Asheville, North Carolina. We'll ask her about that and ask her to share with us some of her poetry. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Wednesday, June 2nd, and you've reached KDBS's Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back after the jazz. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Here's a quick program note. Tonight at Bistro 33, the Poetry in Davis reading series brings you Joshua Clover. Joshua Clover is winner of the most prestigious prize available for an American who's gotten a first book of poetry out, and that is the Walt Whitman Award from the Academy of American Poets. His most recent book, 1989, Bob Dylan Didn't Have This to Sing About, is a bold reimagining of how we understand both pop music and its social context. Joshua Clover is the author of two books of poetry, two books of criticism, one about the movie The Matrix. He's been spending a bunch of time in Paris, but now he'll be descending upon Bistro 33 at 226 F Street tonight for a reading at 8 o'clock. Last time Joshua read at Bistro 33, there were well more than 100 people there, and people showed up early to get seats. I'll be doing that tonight, and maybe I'll see you there at Bistro 33 in the city of Davis tonight at 8 o'clock for Joshua Clover. Joshua Clover and I have one thing in common, at least with my next guest, James Kalin, and that is that we've all spent some time as students at Boston University. James Kalin is the former web editor and co-founder of Flatman Crooked, a full-service independent online and print publishing house that was established in the city of Sacramento in 2008. He graduated with a BA in English and creative writing from the University of California at Davis. He's an Aggie. After that, he earned his fiction MFA at Boston University and writes now for The Sweet Science and for Bedlam Magazine, both in Los Angeles. His first novel, Brute, is forthcoming in 2010, but we're going to be talking to him mostly about his novella, We're Getting On. It's part of the Zero Emission Book Project, and James Kalin is in the middle of that book tour on his bicycle. I'm very pleased that I can reintroduce all of you to James Kalin. James Kalin, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks for having me, Andy.
Absolutely. Well, so you're in the middle of this book tour. Let's pretend I don't know anything about it. What is a zero emission book tour? Where did you start and where are you going?
Well, actually, I have not embarked.
Aha.
I embark on the 3rd of July.
The 3rd of July. So we've got a month yet for you to plan, to get into shape, to gather power bars.
I'm hopefully in shape now.
Excellent.
But I'm still training 6 days a week to get ready for this 1,900-mile bike ride.
1,900 miles. That's intense.
Yeah.
Now, why a 1,900-mile bike trip to support a book?
Well, my first book, which is called We're Getting On, is actually a composite novel. It's four interrelated stories, two novellas and two short stories, that revolve around leaving behind technology,
uh-huh.
Retreat from technology, if you will. The electricity isn't working in most of the stories, as I like to say. But the book itself, the first edition, which is actually just contains the novella, the title novella We're Getting On, is print. I'm actually holding a copy of it in my hand because it just came back from the printer. The cover contains birch seeds, so the book is actually plantable.
Really?
And it'll grow into a tree if you prepare the cover and plant it in the ground. So in keeping with this idea, we wanted to do had this came up with this concept called the Zero Emission Book Project, which is a book that offset its own carbon emissions. And since the novel itself is thematically related to this discarding of not even, it goes beyond discarding technology to discarding culture. But I wanted to have a marketing campaign and wanted to have a book tour that was in keeping with the spirit of the book itself. And it was sort of a logistical nightmare to get a book that grew into a tree, but we've accomplished it. And they look really, really pretty. And the interior of the book is 100% post-consumer material. So it's 100% biodegradable. So you could really rip it up and put it in your garden, and you would get trees.
Wow. If you're just joining us, James Kalin is my guest. He's the author of a multi-part novella called We're Getting On, and it's a book that when you plant it in the ground becomes a tree. It's part of his upcoming Zero Emission Book Project book tour, which will be entirely on bicycle. It starts where and it ends where, James Kalin?
It starts in Los Angeles July 2nd, Friday, July 2nd. We're having the release party at Skylight Books in Los Feliz, which is in sort of the northern part of the new east side of L.A. And then it concludes in Vancouver.
Wow.
50 days later, sometime in August.
So it's an international book tour.
Yeah, it is. It's totally an international book tour. And on the 19th of July, I'll be in Davis.
Excellent. Well, I'll be there to make sure that you're properly welcomed.
Awesome.
And I know that you've got a big event planned in Sacramento sometime around then, don't you?
Yeah, the next day, the 20th, we are doing there's a street getting closed down in Curtis Park. It's going to be between Pangea Cafe and Gunther's Ice Cream, which is right off Franklin Boulevard.
Right.
That little side street is going to be closed down, and there's going to be a big party.
As well there should be with such an auspicious book. Well,
yeah.
James Kalin, I want to hear a sample from this book, but I've got to play a quick public service announcement. So if you will stick around, then we'll be right back to ask you some more questions and to hear a sample of James Kalin's book, We're Getting On. He's my first guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. Joshua Clover's reading tonight at Bistro 33 at 8 o'clock. I'm looking forward to that particular event. We have James Kalin on the line. He is a right now Los Angeles-based author, the author of the book We're Getting On. It's part of the Zero Emission Book Project, sponsored by his publisher, Flatman Crooked. Before we get to a sample of your work, James Kalin, we know that Flatman Crooked is one of the shining beacons of Sacramento area publishing. I'm wondering if there's an author or maybe a couple authors of the Central Valley or the Sacramento Valley that you would suggest listeners seek out and read.
Well, you know, the truth is with the way the modern literary world circles these days,
right?
You know, there are no geographical limitations.
Absolutely.
And Flatman Crooked actually works predominantly with, you know, the authors are from New York, you know, New York, Wisconsin, Los Angeles, all over the place. I'm not sure if we have anyone slated, or if they have anyone slated for publication upcoming. I can certainly recommend wonderful authors that are forthcoming or have already been published on their list. But
you know, I just thought of one who's been on this radio show as well, and that's Whitey Erickson is going to appear in an upcoming anthology of poetry, come to think of it.
Oh, that's I actually wasn't aware of that. Well, yes, I would recommend Whitey to the president.
Excellent.
I think even Barack Obama would get quite a kick out of hearing Whitey read. And for anybody who hasn't heard Whitey read, he is the perfect union of art and the performing of that art. You cannot extract his work from his presentation of it.
Right.
And he's also one of the funniest people to hear read, and he reads just the strangest. He's like I don't know. He's part Garrison Keillor and he's part something made up. I don't know what. colloquial madness that's somehow comprehensible despite being entirely insane.
Absolutely. Well, that's good. That's a good name for people to keep their eyes open for. Why don't we just say one thing about Flatman Crooked before we get to some of your work. Tell me, when you and we're spending a lot of time on behalf of Flatman Crooked, doing lots of writing and promoting, what to you is most exciting about that particular enterprise?
Well, working with the company itself and founding the company.
Yeah.
To actually be attempting to start a company without investment in the middle of a recession and working in an industry that a lot of people, you know, condemned to death, was amazing because it was terrifying at first. And then when we realized that as the industry was, you know, it's in hyper flux right now, what was going to come out the other end, the companies, the publishers who were going to be successful in the second decade of the 20th century or the 21st century were going to be those who were taking the biggest risks and trying out the most creative things. And so to be part of that, you know, for the few years that I was working alongside Elijah Jenkins and Dina Driss, it was just an awesome experience. And there's so many people out there who are willing to help and who are interested in changing the industry. And now Elijah and Dina are obviously carrying on without me, and they're doing some great things, including hopefully the book that I'm, you know, promoting this summer, which, you know, this is no small thing. Poets and Writers is doing a feature on this book project, the Zero Emission Book Project, this summer, because they every summer they do a first fiction annual where they spotlight first-time novelists.
Right.
And this summer they're dedicating the entire issue to independent publishers, and so Flatline Crooked is one of the few independent publishers that they pick out to spotlight. So.
And it's the one, if I remember correctly, that they've chosen for the cover of the magazine.
We think so. We still can't get a final answer from anyone. All I know is that there's a mock-up of the cover that exists where we are on it, or I'm on it.
Well, and on your bike, probably.
Yeah, holding my bike on the beach and with an open shirt. They wanted it to look very summery. So
they wanted some tattoo action.
They wanted some tattoo action. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm actually, you know, trying not to be on pins and needles about this, but on June 15th, the magazine hits the newsstands and the new issue will be online.
Excellent. Well, we can look forward to that. Well, let's, if you've got it right there, let's hear an excerpt from your Zero Emission Book Project book, and that's We're Getting On, published by Flatman Crooked.
All right. Here we go. So this is from the eighth section of the title novella, which actually starts on chapter 10 and goes to chapter 1, so it's whatever that means, the third chapter.
All right.
We've walked some immeasurable distance. In front of us, rooted in the mountainside, is a trunk. I hesitate to call it a tree because it has long since stopped growing. I imagine by lightning strike. Sam and I sit beside each other with a collection of stones between us. Some time ago, I saw a vulture circling overhead. It must have had designs on us, much as we had designs on it, though it failed to alight. And there's a hawk now, rotating around us, and it's decreasing the radius of its circle with each pass. It very well might roost in our vicinity, whatever that means. It'd settle before us on a limb, and then we would only have to knock it from its perch. I pick up a rock in anticipation. Sam, sitting on his damp coat, seems to have fallen asleep. I don't dare wake him. If I were to startle him, he might make a startling noise, and then where would we be? Certainly without a carcass. Not that a hawk could feed five people, but what a nice victory it would be. I stand up, and as if I had willed it to, the hawk lands on the tree. It lifts one wing, preens a feather with its beak, and stares across the valley. I'd like to hit it in the head. That would give me the greatest likelihood of killing it. But, of course, I should be content with striking it at all. It's more than 30 feet away from me, the beast. The rock I'm holding, shaped something like a disc, is smooth, as if it spent some time tumbling along the bottom of a river. When I hurl it, it spins through the air. The bird doesn't move, but it has no need to. My aim is off by 5 or 6 yards, which is such a significant misfire that I have time to pick up a second stone and throw it. Much to my confusion, this one strikes the hawk in the wing and it shuffles across its branch. Assuming I've stunned it, I pick up a third rock and run forward. Without stopping to aim, I throw, but my projectile sails over the tree and lands without a sound in the dry grass. I stop to search for another weapon and find a piece of shale, but when I stand to proceed, I see the bird have sent its perch and fly unsteadily into the hills. The walk back with Sam is a slow affair. We haven't eaten, which doesn't bother me, but he moves forward with his head down, holding his stomach. It's amazing how quickly he's lost his desire for privacy. But deprivation can do that. After a few weeks of starvation, the desire for relief starts to erase one's propensity for etiquette. I watch him depart from the trail again, which isn't a trail. And then I'm going to skip something that might not be radio appropriate.
All right.
When we reach the canal again, Sam steps into it, holding his coat over his head. There's no pretext in this action. he's weaker than he was when we set out this morning, and he knows that if he couldn't jump over the ditch then, he can't now. He seems quite resigned to walking through the water. For a moment, it appears that he has no desire to exit either. The current isn't strong. He could stand there for years without his legs wearing away, but he doesn't pause for long. He puts his shoulder on the opposite bank and rolls out so that he's lying on his back with his arms stretched out above him. I assume he'll rise, but he doesn't. He might not have the energy. I jump over the canal and consider helping him to his feet. But I want to encourage self-sufficiency. If he can't get up, he can roll to the garden. In fact, I would like to see him travel in that manner. He stored up enough potential energy that he could release it in a mighty tumble down the hill. Out of curiosity and aversion, I crouch behind him, slide my hands beneath his back, and turn him over. When that revolution doesn't achieve the desired effect, I repeat it, and then once more, when the second fails. The third is a resounding success, and he starts to pick up speed. If he were shaped like a cylinder, his trajectory might have been more linear, but his hips are narrower than his shoulders, and he rolls in a gentle curve, stopping, no doubt to his dismay, a good distance from the camp. I find that I'm almost jealous of his efficiency. I'll leave it there.
That is great. Wonderful. I've got someone here in the studio who's clapping. I'm really looking forward to receiving my copy.
Awesome.
You launched this book rather than just started selling it. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about that.
Well, the launch program, which is something that I helped develop at Flatman Crooked back in 2009, is what we call an author investment program where, you know, primarily friends and family can come in and support an author's work. So you buy shares in a book, and there was there was a basic launch share, which was $15, which gets you a signed copy of the first edition novella. And then there was a super launch option, which started at a sliding price scale, started at $60, went up to $150. And for that, you get the first edition novella signed. Then you also get the second edition, which is the full novel. And then there was also an album that we recorded. And on top of that, and then the other cool thing is all the super launchers, I'll be sending a postcard from the tour to all of them. And the postcards were designed by four artists, and each postcard correlates to one of the four sections of the book. So because during the tour, I'm not allowed to use a phone or a computer. I'm not allowed to be in a car. I can't watch TV. I'm not allowed to sleep inside, all kinds of stuff. But we decided that I would be allowed to write postcards to people. So everyone will be getting a postcard.
That seems fair.
Super launches. Yeah. Got to stay in contact somehow.
Well, that's good. So I can expect a postcard and two different editions of your book, We're Getting On.
Yeah, as well as for the people who have qualms about planting the entire book in the ground, there are also some gorgeous seed paper bookmarks that Porridge Papers, who made the paper and printed the covers for us out in Nebraska, they made these for us for free, and so you can just plant the bookmark and you can get a tree that way.
Excellent.
And really quickly too, before you have to move on to your next guest, I did want to say that the tour, Flatman Crooked is obviously supporting me, but there's a whole bunch of organic farms up the coast that are going to be housing me and feeding me along the way, and you can find a full list of those at zeroemissionbook.com. And Cannondale Bicycles are the bicycle sponsor for the tour, and Bellwether Cycling Clothes gave us a bunch of clothes, and we have cameras. We're making a documentary of the project, and Flip Cameras gave us a bunch of their new cameras, and pretty cool. And we're also raising money for pediatric cancer through the Pavlov Foundation. So, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Excellent. Well, it seems to me, James Kalin, like you've thought of everything, And, of course, you've got a high-tech website that people can go check out to chart your progress and find out more about this. Could you remind me what the URL is?
It's www.zeroemissionbook.com. And there's a tour blog there and all kinds of news. And you can learn all about it. You can learn all about our sponsors. And you can buy a copy of the book and whatever else your heart desires.
Excellent. Well, that's exactly what my heart desires, and I'm glad that it'll be fulfilled. James Kalin, it's been great to talk to you about this project. I look forward to hearing about your launch. Did you say, is it the 2nd or the 3rd of July?
The actual launch is the 2nd of July at Skylight Books in L.A., and then I'm departing on the tour on the 3rd, and I'll be in Davis, whatever I said, the 19th.
I think you said the 19th. Great. I'm looking forward to that. James Kalin, good luck with all that, and thanks so much for appearing once again on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks, Andy, and we'll hopefully do it again maybe during the tour.
Oh, definitely we will. Take care now.
All right, bye, Andy.
Bye-bye. That was James Kalin. He's the author of the brand-new novella, We're Getting On, and as he mentioned, you can check it all out at zeroemissionbook.com. Really one of the most innovative ways of starting a book project than I could imagine. Perhaps you've got some ideas for James Kalin. You can reach him any number of ways. You can also drop an email to me at aojones@gmail.com. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'm really looking forward to the reading tonight, starring Joshua Clover at Bistro 33, 226 F Street. And that happens tonight at 8 o'clock. The open mic starts at 9. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Catcher in the Rye, Of Mice and Men, Harry Potter, what is your favorite book? Chances are good that someone has tried to ban it. Every year there are hundreds of attempts to remove books from schools and libraries. Celebrate your freedom to read during Banned Books Week, September 25th to October 5th, 2010. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at ala.org. A public service message brought to you by KDVS. And coming up next on The Lifeline, after we hear some more of this great Thelonious Monk music, will be Laura Hope Gill from Asheville, North Carolina. Stick around. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, with a reminder that you can hear public affairs programs Monday through Friday on this radio station. Shows with titles such as It's About You, This Week in Science, and Radio Parallax inform and intrigue you, challenge your preconceptions, and often give you a good laugh. If you want to find out more, point your browser to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My next guest this afternoon is Laura Hope Gill. Laura Hope Gill lives in Asheville, North Carolina, and the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation named her its first poet laureate, in part because of her poems in the book The Soul Tree, Poems and Photographs of the Southern Appalachian. Her next book, Look Up Asheville, is comprised of her writings about Asheville architecture with photographs by Michael Oppenheim. Currently, she's working on a book of poems to photographs by Ian Young from Edinburgh. She's the director of the Asheville Word Fest, about which we'll say much more in a moment. But first, Laura Hope Gill, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you, Dr. Andy. I'm really happy to be here, and thanks for that lovely introduction.
Absolutely. Well, you work on the most interesting book projects, and many of them combine photography with words and poems. And I'm wondering, what about that combination appeals to you?
The process appeals to me because it brings out a third element from two others, so it creates a resonance or a harmony, which I find releases all sorts of interesting chemicals in my brain when I'm doing it. It just makes me very joyful when I find my way into a picture. And in working with the architecture, I've learned so much more about how to see and how to walk through a city. And that process also began with the Soul Tree, because the photographer showed me how to look at these mountains And before that, when I would go up to the mountains to write, really, it was just too much. It was too beautiful. And I couldn't, nothing came. But when I saw his photograph, suddenly I could write about this place. And the same is happening with this, the architecture book.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about your own training as a poet or as someone who appreciates the visual arts. What was it that first woke you up to the possibilities of poetry, and where did you continue to train after that?
Excellent. As a child, I used poetry to sort things through. For me, it was a survival skill, and I didn't think that it was something unusual. I thought everybody did it.
Right.
I thought everybody made up songs on their walk home from the school bus, and everyone filled the margins of their algebra papers with poems. And I didn't make the connection that I was doing something that was a art until maybe in college when I was reading John Keats' letters, and I made the connection then. But the way that poetry was taught in school was so different from how it felt to be the one making it that I didn't make the connection. And with looking around, I moved 13 times by the time I was 11 and lived in three different countries.
I remember that one of them was Canada.
Yes, Canada, England, and the United States, and
wow.
In very different parts of the United States, the mountains and the beach. And so I think looking around became important to me, and learning to orient myself was directly connected to, okay, what buildings are there, and what does the sea look like today? And this became a very visual adapter to things. And finding, writing about places and writing about what I see, I think is just my natural way of being in the world. It feels very natural.
Natural is a good way to put it. What sort of mentors did you find as a writer?
On my way, I my first encounter with someone from the official poetry world was Zan Knudsen, who was May Swenson's partner for many years. And May had just died when my mother ran a beach race with Zan. And the two women started talking, and my mother told her I was a poet, and Zan sat me down and looked at my work and told me that four of my poems were, insert expletive here, and then I thought, well, that's great, the others are great, and she said, but they're not half, insert expletive, as these, and she kind of took me on as an apprentice, teaching me May's way of writing. She would bring me May's rough drafts.
Wow.
And show me. She actually had me, she threw one at me once, and I had like 18 pages of one poem, and she said, put them in order, I'll be back in an hour. And so that was a wonderful and horrendous a mentorship, apprenticeship. And I eventually moved on. I went to Australia, and that was where things really picked up for me. I heard a performance poet there named Pai O and became his apprentice after hitchhiking around Tasmania for a couple of months. I realized I just wanted to work with the poets that he was a part of. And so it was the Collective Effort Press in Australia that really broke me open and helped me become more myself in poems.
Wonderful.
And after that, it was the Warren Wilson MFA program a few years later.
I want to hear more about that, but let's remind folks first that we're listening to the voice of Laura Hope Gill. She is currently an Asheville, North Carolina-based poet, and she's the director of Asheville WordFest, as well as the author of a number of books. Who at Warren Wilson was most helpful to you, or was your biggest influence? Because I have some friends and professors who have either been students or faculty there.
Well, your own Michael Ryan, is he still at UC Davis?
I don't think
he was at UC Irvine, I think.
Right.
Yes, he helped me immensely my final semester. He would read my poems back to me on a cassette tape. And hearing Michael Ryan read my work was a wonderful way to tune my ear.
Right.
Because his ear is so fine. And the way the whole process worked was quite brilliant. At first, I had Ellen Bryant Voigt, who was very formal. And then I worked with Steve Lorlin, who was very, Joan Elshire, who was very open. And then Steve Orlin was more into some kinds of, I wouldn't say he was a formalist, but he definitely was into technique. And then Tony Hoagland, who did my essay with me, was my nemesis for about 6 months.
Yeah.
Reining me in because I wanted to keep going wild, but he kept bringing me to ground, and that was a perfect pairing. The school really knew how to pair me with the poets, and so I consider them all, integral parts of my training.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Of those poets, I've seen Ellen Bryant Voigt read here in Davis. That was almost 20 years ago that she was here. And Tony Hoagland, I've just discovered in the last 18 months or so. I love his poetry, and I've been delighting in some of his essays as well.
Yes.
So these sound like wonderful people to work with.
Yeah, I was blessed.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, people listening here in the Sacramento Valley and everywhere else via the World Wide Web, I'm sure would love to hear some of your poetry. And you told us offline that you have a poem that speaks to our current environmental crisis in the Gulf of Mexico. And so I was wondering if you could share that with us.
This poem is called The Hole. H-O-L-E. They thought the things inside the things needed to come out, so they broke the earth open. They said, we can control the opening, open the earth on our terms. They made a hole. They didn't know that holes can break. They thought they were the ones doing the breaking. When the hole broke, it was a broken opening. Close it, the people said. They thought the thing they'd done, they could undo it because they were the ones that did it. It could not be undone. They did not understand the earth. They did not know the nature of breaking, of being broken open. What's broken only knows how to break open more once it has been cut. It does what it is told. It gives what was asked for and opens wider, delivering what was asked, flowing out. This is what the earth has always done. It flows what was asked for. It gives itself over. Isn't this the thing you wanted, it says. Isn't this what I was supposed to do? The whole only knows how to open more and deeper. This is the nature of holes, of giving, of taking the will of another into itself and making it its own. It flows because it's open. It breaks because it was broken. And what's open never closes up easily. It is a wounded gash into something. It pulses, and it throbs. They thought they could shout at it to make it stop. What they themselves did not stop themselves from doing, they tried to change the lesson of the cut. But the hole had learned its lesson and was giving them what they wanted. Take from me, it said. Take everything you wanted. And it swallowed them whole in its giving. It was bigger than them. They did not know.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Very, very poignant, and gives us a perspective on this ongoing crisis in such a way that makes it even more heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening.
Absolutely. Laura Hope Gill is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. She lives in Asheville, North Carolina, where she is the director of the Asheville Word Fest. And I was hoping, Laura, you could tell us a little bit about the Word Fest.
I'd be happy to. Our website is ashevillewordfest.org. And coming up soon on that will be the updated video archives of this most recent festival. my vision is to create a whole archive of remarkable readings recorded on video for schools and community programs, and also for people who are at the office and need to take a little break.
Right.
And so they can go to the website and hear Elizabeth Bradfield. They can hear Quincy Troop. Soon they'll be able to see David White and a tremendous pair of poets named the Flying Words Project, who collaborate in ASL poetry, as well as Mark Doty and Natasha Trethewey, who were here. The festival live webcasts, and I don't know of other festivals in the country that are doing live webcasts. It's an exciting way to get a poetry festival around the world. We had 2,000 people watch in 14 countries, and all the way over to Bahrain and Israel. So that was that's a wonderful feeling, that something that's going on in this little town is reaching that far.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the goal of the festival, I frame poetry as citizen journalism. It doesn't mean the poetry has to change or the poets have to write a certain way. It doesn't affect which poets I select. It just says, here's a new way of listening to poems, a new way of experiencing them, kind of taking them down off the mighty shelf.
Right.
Where I don't think any poet meant for them to belong. But they kind of got pushed there somehow. Someone put them there and forgot about them. And so it's a new way of looking at things. And we have the publisher of the local paper, Asheville Citizen Times, gave us the front page, plus 4 pages of the news section. And he devoted entire pages of the news section to one local poet working with a photojournalist. It was wonderful. It was beautiful to see one whole page of the news with one poem and the word news at the top. And the city loved it, too. So that was a coming to fruition moment for WordFest, which is just 3 years old. That's what we do.
How wonderful to have such creative forms of support behind this project. That must be very gratifying for you.
It was incredible. And working side by side with the publisher of a paper that's a part of the Gannett circuit, it gave me hope, too, that other papers will listen and see that the communities that they're publishing or actually do want to participate in the way that poetry lets readers participate. And I'm hoping it will spread like wildfire, Dr. Andy.
That's great. My father once worked indirectly for the Gannett Corporation.
Oh, wow.
And back in that day, they were far less interested in what was going on in local communities and were thinking that bottom-line decisions made by important executives in faraway cities would be more effective than responding to local concerns and local wishes, for instance, for the arts. And I'm glad they've changed. I'm sure it's in part because of the challenges that have faced the newspaper industry.
I think they're open to a change. Mm-hmm. And I think that the blogging wave has opened doors.
Right.
That's what gave me the idea. It was how is poetry different from blogging? I'm sure it would be a wonderful discussion to have a group of people have. But I thought, well, poetry's been doing this for ages. Poets have been blogging for centuries.
Right, right.
What do you mean? And so I just tied the two together and so far, you know, some people want to argue, but then I think we realize we're not really arguing anything here.
Absolutely.
Right. So I'm enjoying it, and the city is enjoying the festival. We've had about 1,500 people turn out for it. And so it's a wonderful way of identifying who are the poets, who's writing, who's doing this inductive reasoning thing that poetry involves. And that strengthens the community.
And how long does the WordFest last?
It's a weekend, single weekend. And but a lot happens during that weekend.
I can tell.
Yeah.
And you're touching lots of people during that very important weekend.
Yes. And I have a strategy. One of my long-term goals is to use this festival to break down barriers between cultures and communities. And so my strategy is to invite poets that reflect the diversity of our communities. And we kind of get into the habit of, I don't know, tokenism and mostly white lineups, and called it multicultural if there were maybe two minorities represented.
Right.
And I don't think that's good enough. I think that multiculturalism means what it says. And so our poster should reflect groups, multiple groups. And I really enjoy piecing that together and challenging myself to get over my own habits of perception and questioning, you know, what voices will go, should be presented where people won't be able to walk away saying, I like this one better, you know?
Right.
I don't want that to be the thought that people walk away with. I want it to be silence and, whoa, something really hit me and I need to talk to somebody just to explore it and have conversations that we don't have enough of.
It's wonderful when art can inspire reflection instead of just applause.
That's it. That's it. And one thing I'm discovering is how we introduce poets at readings has limited our audience's experience of the poet. By getting up there and listing off the CV, the poet doesn't enjoy it, and the audience will either get intimidated or impressed, but neither are postures of receiving. And so I'm interested in finding new ways to introduce poets, perhaps talking about their use of image so that the audiences that can listen for something and have an inroad rather than the cult of celebrity pouring over into a poetry reading. So you saw these wonderful experiments going on with WordFest.
That's great. I would love to talk to you more about that. I just finished teaching a freshman seminar called Introducing Today's Speaker, where we spent a lot of time talking about introductions. And then And then I made the students put together their own speaker series with people who they recruited, and the last third of the quarter was just our enjoying the words of invited and well-introduced speakers.
Oh, how interesting. Well, I would love to, but we'll talk about that more.
I'd love to, and also I'm very active in something called the Cultural Action Committee of the City of Davis, and what you are doing with WordFest is a couple years ahead of what we'd like to do with some of our activities, so I'd love to chat more about your successes.
Oh, definitely. I'd love it.
Well, Laura Hope Gill, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you this afternoon and to hear your delightful poetry. Is there anything else upcoming that you want to plug or give us a sense of how we could find your books?
Well, thank you. The Soul Tree is at thesoultree.org, and people can see the page spreads there. And look up Asheville, which even if you aren't from Asheville, it's good to be. It's interesting because it's about a city that was designed by architects who graduated of the Beaux-Arts tradition. And then Asheville went into an economic sleep after the Depression, so we missed a lot of development that went on in other cities.
How lucky.
So, yeah, we're a bit of a time capsule for a time when fine arts really, really shaped a city.
Wonderful.
And so that will be coming out. Hopefully, we plan on having it out in September. So, Soul Tree, and look up Asheville. And then I invite people to come and enjoy the website for WordFest, because we have these wonderful poets archived there. And that's AshevilleWordFest.org.
Excellent. Well, Laura Hope Gill, this is the first of additional conversations, I hope. Some of them that we'll have here on the radio. Thanks so much for joining me today on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone who's listening.
All right. You take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. We just are going to hear a quick word from our sponsor, and then we'll finish up the show.
This hour of programming is brought to you courtesy of the Yolo County Federal Credit Union. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union is a nonprofit financial cooperative with locations throughout Yolo County. The Yolo County Federal Credit Union offers a wide range of financial services and can be reached by phone at 530-668-2700 or online at yolofcu.org.
This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I'd like to thank my two guests, including Laura Hope Gill of Asheville, North Carolina, and James Kalin, who right now is in Los Angeles, but who will be biking, no doubt, towards a city near you before long. On behalf of everyone here at KDBS, I'd like to thank you for listening this hour and remind you that Joshua Clover will start reading in just about 2 hours at Bistro 33 here in the city of Davis. And I'll be back next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Talk to you then.